this group of people know who they are, where they come from, but it's being taken away from them. And they feel they have no choice and no control in the whole matter.
Hello and welcome to the Unreported World podcast. I'm Krishnan Gurumurthy. With me this week is Adia Depitan, who's been to the Congo to meet a tribe who believe they are under threat. The forest where the Baka hunt for their food is being made off limits. The government wants to turn the area into a protected park to help preserve wildlife. The tribe say they're already experiencing intimidation and threats by the proposed park's guards. Adi travelled to the rainforest to see how the Baka are fighting for their food and to find out how their lives are changing. Sounds like an amazing trip.
Yeah, it was incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I think the thing that probably doesn't come across actually is how remote we were and how hard it was to get to Sembe, where we spent some time with the Baka. So we started off in Brazzaville, so it's a long flight to Brazzaville, capital of the French part of the Congo. And then from Brazzaville, it was like a 9-hour drive to Oyo, which was like the halfway point, and then another 9-hour drive. In the end, it basically took us 3 days to get to Sembe. And then you just arrive in this unbelievable paradise. It's just so much rainforest, so remote and so stunning, and you just can't believe that actually people live there. It's, the total opposite to life here in London.
We are deep, deep in the forest, and we're heading to a village that is so remote. The only way you can get to it is on this dusty, muddy road. Here goes, I'm off to the bush. Oh my days, this is proper forest.
And who are the Baka tribe?
Well, the Baka tribe are one of the tribes in the French part of the Congo, and they're seen as forest people. For generations, their families have grown up, lived and survived in the rainforests of the Congo Basin. They're often treated really badly.
Really marginalised.
Yeah, they're really marginalised. And I suppose for people in Africa, people in the Congo, even in Africa, because I know what it's like being coming from Nigeria, when you have people who grow up in the forest or in the bush, as they like to say, they're seen as more backwards because they're less educated. And I think for us, coming from growing up in the UK, I looked at them in awe because some of the skills that they have, well, all the skills they have, were just, you know, things that I would never survive in the forest.
There's a moment in the film where the man refers to how they are spoken of pejoratively as pygmies.
Mm.
So is that how they are talked about?
They definitely felt persecuted. You know, they definitely felt like they were looked upon as the lowest of the low.
They push us around because they just see us as pygmies.
They don't like to be called pygmies. They prefer to be called the Baka. You know, I think they see the pygmy term as pejorative, as an insult.
And so they have lived on bushmeat. What kind of things are they eating?
Well, they eat everything. You know, it's a totally different mindset. So for them, it's just natural. You know, they'll eat the porcupine, they'll eat the guinea pig, they'll eat all of that stuff because it's there for survival. But the thing to get across is they don't eat more than they need. They eat for survival, and it's not as for fun or for trophies.
And they generally go out and hunt for themselves.
Yes, they generally that's what they do. They go out and hunt for themselves, but that's now becoming harder and harder. Now the rainforest is going to be turned into a restricted area, into a wildlife park, and I think the knock-on effect on that, you know, there's a lot of complications that's coming from that. But one of the knock-on effects on that is, a generation of them are starting to lose those hunting skills because they're no longer allowed to go into the forest.
So what are the new rules? What are they being stopped from doing, and who by?
Well, the government are coming up with new laws which are creating protected areas in the rainforest in Sembe. And there are certain animals I haven't got the list of all the animals, but certain monkeys, you know, certain types of deer and all of that are protected species and they can't be hunted by them. What's become a grey area for the backer is partly because a lot of them are uneducated and they can't read and they haven't got someone who's a proper spokesman for them. It's hard for them to know what they can and can't hunt. Yeah, and that's where it becomes difficult.
And this is policed by, yeah. by guards?
Yeah, this is policed by guards called Eco Guards, which was set up by the government. And the Eco Guards' job is to protect these areas from poachers. And what the knock-on effect is, it's basically forced the backer out. It's forced the backer out of the rainforest. They're basically on the edge of the rainforest and on the roads, and their food supply is basically being depleted.
Can you tell me about the issues that the village people and the backer are facing in this area?
Many are marginalized in the forest. People look down on them. There are now laws that stop them living off the forest.
Do they have an alternative source of food? There's no market or supermarket where they can go and buy something with whatever income they're able to get.
Well, I said to you, this is a remote, remote place. You know, we drove there on really hardcore roads. I mean, it'll make people's eyes water over here. We moan about potholes, the type of roads that we drove on to get to them. And it was taking us probably an hour every day just to get to those people from the nearest town of Sembe. And on foot, you're talking 3-4 hours to get there for their nearest market. And they haven't got any form of income. So they wouldn't have any money if they could make that 5-6 hour journey to buy any of the stuff anyway.
So what is their attitude towards protecting the rainforest? I mean, do they just think it's crazy or do they understand it?
They understand it and they see themselves as the custodians of the rainforest. They say they've been in the rainforest for generations and, you know, they've never harmed or damaged the rainforest. But the poachers, they see as people who are coming from outside. You know, outsiders who are coming in and they're the ones who are hunting the big game. And not them.
So how much of a struggle for survival is this? I mean, you know, are they genuinely at risk?
I think so, because one, they're so remote. So for them to find another food source is nigh on impossible in terms of the practicality to get to the local market.
We only eat meat once a week. And that's if we can catch any.
The local town is too far away, so they're not educated. Their kids are not going to school. The opportunities for them are next to nothing. And so I feel they will either, you know, dwindle out or they'll have to leave the rainforest and find another way. But then the next problem they have is if they leave the rainforest and come into town, they still have to get over this stigma of being seen as pygmies, as seen as the lowest of the low.
Were you able to put this to anybody? That, you know, that they are the collateral damage of a well-meaning policy.
We tried to speak to the Eco Guards. Nobody wanted to speak to us. You know, I mean, I'm a nice, friendly chap. I wanted to have a good, amiable conversation with the people, but there was always excuses that they were away, they were busy, they had this and that. I mean, I couldn't speak to anyone face to face.
Practically, what was it like for you? Because I mean, what can you get a wheelchair through the rainforest?
No, you can only get a wheelchair so far. You know, I mean, although there are some times when I look at the rainforest and think it's kind of a bit more accessible than the London Underground. But you know, that's just my opinion. I had to abandon my wheelchair and use my crutches at a certain stage. And I trekked about 45 minutes through the jungle with them. I was drenched in sweat. I mean, these guys are super fit. The funny thing is they'll traipse through the jungle or the rainforest in flip-flops or Crocs, and they're moving at pace, you know, in and out of the bushes. They turn around and they look at me perplexed. They look at all of us like, why can't you negotiate this simply? What's up with you city folk? It was amazing to see them in action and to see them at home in that rainforest. And that's when I kind of got, when I looked at them and just thought, this is their place. What will happen to them? This is a world where things are changing, globalization, big cities, and this is a group of people that are from another generation trying to find their way in this time and place. And I actually felt really, really sorry for them. I just didn't know, you know, how are they going to progress? How are we going to make this work? There should be some way to make it work, because we can't lose it. We can't concrete over everything, you know, and just have little parks here and there. You know, this rainforest is part of our history. It's part of what makes us who we are.
And were you able to have that conversation with them about what the future holds?
Yeah, they were scared. You know, they were scared. I think they genuinely felt that, you know, it could be the end of who they are. You know, and I think this actually digs into a deeper story that the world is struggling with at the moment, and this identity. We are all struggling for identity and struggling for who we are, because things are changing so quickly. You know, even we are seeing it. I think Brexit is a part of that. You know, sorry to bring up that big word.
You
know,
can't do an Unreported World podcast.
I know.
Without talking about Brexit.
I'm sorry, but I think this is, it's all part of it. It's all part of identity, people searching for who they are.
Were they angry or were they sort of helpless?
I think there's a little bit of both. I think partly life is so tough that it's kind of difficult to have enough time to dwell and be angry on anything, because you have to feed yourself, you got to feed your family, you got to build a shelter. But, you know, when I interviewed them and spoke about, you know, incidents they had with eco guards and incidents they're having with the government, then yeah, they were angry. You know, they were saying they were being bullied, they were saying they were being pushed from pillar to post. And they were frustrated and they didn't understand. You know, they're saying we are Congolese, we are part of this country, but yet we're being treated like, you know, an underclass.
How did it compare to things you've seen before?
What I struggled with is the real vulnerability of this group of people, of this tribe, because of their lack of opportunities, the lack of access to education. I don't think on their own they're going to find a solution to this. You know, I think they are going to be, as you say, collateral damage. And that, to me, was tough to watch.
Well, thank you, Andy. It's a fascinating film. Beautiful place as well.
Thank you.
It's absolutely stunning rainforest to just look at.
Yeah.
And to film.
We're lucky, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for listening to this podcast as well. Addy's film is now available to watch on All Four and on the Unreported World YouTube channel. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please give us a rating and a review, and do subscribe so you'll get the next one. Until next time, bye-bye.